Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Tim Anderson digging in, 1-for-4 tonight.
Good matchup here for a low ball hitter, sinking fastball.
Anderson hits it in the air to right, back at the wall, and the White Sox win it! Well, you can throw the party, but you never know how it's going to turn out.
Unreal.
Molly and Haw. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Wow. Well, you can throw the party, but sometimes the party doesn't last. We are delighted to welcome in Scott Merkin from the MLB Network covering the Chicago White Sox. Had a great sit-down conversation with Tim Anderson, and he joins us on The Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire. Aturo.com. Hey, Scott, how are you?
Gentlemen, how are you doing? It's not how long the party lasts, but the intensity of it when it's going on, right? Is that it?
Seems like the party's over. Turn the lights out.
Yeah, turn out the lights is right. I feel so conflicted about everything that happened with Tim Anderson. And, you know, he was a hell of a player, and then he kind of fell off the ledge. How is he recovering from that? And, you know, I saw the quote about him hoping to enjoy baseball again. And I got to tell you, Scott, I would prefer if he would talk about getting back to the player he was. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's just tough.
Yeah, you know, I had a good talk with him Wednesday. We talked for about 20 minutes. The story's running today in my newsletter. But, you know, he said that he had a couple, when he got released by the Marlins July 5th last year, he had a couple teams or he had a little bit of interest where he could have kept playing last year, but decided it was time to get healthy, both physically and mentally, and really work on himself. And actually, I had reached out a couple times before then, and when I did hear from him in this offseason, he said that he had, you know, kind of just, I don't know if gone silent is the right phrase, but was really focused on working on himself and working on his baseball. He lives in Atlanta now with his family, so he's really been doing that. And he was pretty candid in admitting that, you know, he made some mistakes too, but there were injuries along the way. And that's, you know, the problem with, you know, when you kind of rely on a rebuild like they're doing now and like they did before, the prospects look great, but, you know, you can stub your toe pretty quickly. He hurt his hand in Texas, which cost him, what, it was the last 2 months of the 22 season, right? Yeah. Got to put all the years together at this point. And then 23, he hurt his left knee really early on, and that really screwed up his whole swing. He came back where he felt like he wasn't 100%, but wanted to come back for the team, developed some bad habits, and just was never really able to get over those bad habits. I mean, it's just, it's strange. It really is. From like 2016 to 2022, especially like 20, 21, 20, you know, the beginning of 22, he was as electric as any player in the game, right? I mean, he was, I don't want to say the face of baseball, but he was certainly up there, you know, started an all-star game, played on Team USA for WBC, won a batting title, was close to 100 home runs for his career, and then the last 2 years, by his own admission, have been, you know, pretty bad. He's very excited to get to work with Ron Washington, who's been kind of, I don't know, is infield whisperer the right phrase? I mean, does really good work with infielders. And he knows Ryan Goins, who's a coach there who he played with the White Sox. He knows Tim Laker, who was a minor league coach for the White Sox. So he's excited to get this opportunity. He feels like he's in a better spot than he was at this point last year.
So I understand why you'd want to talk to him. The Tim Anderson story is one full of mystery and intrigue and all those things, Merk. But I don't know what his goal was in talking to you and going on the Foul Territory podcast and maybe starting to make the rounds. Is he trying to send the message that he's healthy physically and mentally? Is he trying to send them? What is he hoping people get from hearing him talk about his experience? Because I think it's easy to look at him and wonder if he's got anything left.
Yeah, it's a good question. I asked him during the interview if he thought about it. He has, you know, we had talked the year before, I believe we were in Kansas City, and we had talked about some of his outside business interests that he has, and I had asked him, had he really thought after, you know, another struggle till a year last year with Florida about retiring, and he said, not going back to baseball more so than retiring, I guess, you know, you're 31, 30, it's kind of tough to say retiring at that point, but it would be sort of, and he said that no, you know, he said his confidence was shot. And, you know, but he knew it was still in there and he wanted to kind of find it. So it's a good question about, I mean, I think he's just kind of, he was waiting for the right moment when he felt comfortable, I think, to talk about what he had gone through, to talk about it. And he really had not, you know, said anything since he got released. He, as he said, he had stayed kind of quiet, hadn't even shown much. Like if you look at his social media, aside from him hitting a little bit here and there. So you really didn't know. You didn't know what direction he was going in. Maybe, like you said, this is his way of saying, okay. And he admitted, you know, he said he has no leverage. He has no leg up. Really, this is the first time in his career because that he's fighting for a job out of spring training. When he was a minor leaguer with the Sox, it wasn't fighting for a job. It was just, when is he ready, right? You know, he was a top prospect. When is he going to make the team? So there was no fighting for a job, really. It was going to be his when he had hit that point. Now he goes in as a non-roster invite, you know, minor league deal, and he's doing everything, you know, fighting for that roster spot with the Angels.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it is kind of emblematic of kind of what happened in the last rebuild, right? The idea that all these guys that were, you know, it just never happened. It just didn't, for whatever reason, it didn't come to fruition. You had this team and you had this hope and, no, it just did. I mean, in retrospect, and I know there was kind of a self-inflicted portion of it. He talked to AJ about how the scandal kind of slowed him down. It was weird.
He said the same thing. I talked to him a little bit about that, too. Yeah. You know, he said that, yeah, he had readily admitted that. And he said that went into the mental part of things, where he had to kind of figure out who he wanted to be moving forward. So, you know, that it was all part of it. There's no, but, you know, you're right. I mean, Tim was – not putting it all on Tim, obviously, because there's a lot of good young players in that last rebuild, really good young players. But Tim kind of represented the kind of highs in that rebuild and then kind of the low points too, right? I mean, you know, with his struggles. I mean, was there a bigger moment than when he hit that, we kind of refer to it as the stalk-off in Iowa into the right field corn, right? But was there a bigger moment aside from maybe the Game 3 win in the playoffs against Houston during the rebuild in that Field of Dreams game? It was unreal, right? And, I mean, he was an all-star starter. He was a batting champ. He was, you know, Team USA in the World Baseball Classic, and now, you know, this is where he is now. But, I mean, you look at that entire core who were very talented. I mean, there's no question about it, but Tim is on a minor league deal with the Angels. Eloy Jimenez is on a minor league deal with the Rays.
Yeah.
And Moncada and Abreu are still waiting for, you know, I'm sure they're getting offers. I mean, the other side. But, you know, they're still waiting for a deal for their next employment right now. That was kind of the position player core of that rebuild.
Is Tim Anderson bitter about his White Sox exit or experience?
No, not at all. I think he's kind of moved on. He did have a funny line where I asked him, you know, did he feel bad or did he pay much attention since he was, you know, off of baseball to what happened to the Sox last year? And he said, no, you know, I didn't have time to feel bad for them. He goes, I felt like I went through 222 losses myself. He goes, so I didn't have time to really feel bad for anybody else. I had to worry about myself. And I get that, right? I get that he was focused on just getting himself back for getting ready for baseball.
Scott, you know, it's wild, but we talked earlier today about this idea that San Diego is talking about trading Dylan Cease and, you know, what the Cubs would have to give up because the Cubs are apparently interested. And then you go back and you kind of revisit that deal, and Drew Thorpe is still suffering inflammation, right? Suffering problems after that surgery he had. They were going to shave down a bone spur or something. I mean, and he's the key piece. He was the guy that was, you know, moved from the Yankees and in their big trade, and then moves to the White Sox in the Cease deal. And, you know, I know he's still a young guy, young pitcher, but it's not really going well.
Yeah, I think probably a little early to judge that, but I see what you're saying. You know, I mean, Thorpe is, you know, Thorpe can always say he was traded for Juan Soto and Dylan Cease, right? That's pretty, that's something to put on your resume right there. But yeah, I was a little surprised when I talked to him last Friday at Sox Fest Live that he said he had had a couple setbacks during the offseason. He'd had a cortisone shot that morning. And then in texting with Chris Getz, you know, Getz admitted there's always a concern when there's a setback, but they also felt that, you know, they handled this and that he would be ready by April. So he's going to be behind. You know, he hasn't thrown a bullpen yet, so he's going to be behind come spring training. And they're certainly in his first full major league season, certainly not going to rush anything. So, you know, they're still not at the contention stage. So if you're going to, you know, pull back a little bit injury-wise, now might be the time, right? I mean, so, but I mean, yeah, I mean, he's a key guy. Ariarte got to the majors last year. Could be a back-end starter, could be a reliever. Zavala, very young. Didn't have a great year average-wise last year, but I mean, I believe is 20 right now, so a lot of room to grow.
Right.
And then Wilson was just kind of a veteran guy to help out right now in the bullpen. So I think the time will still tell, but yeah, the injury is not what you ever want to see for a young guy like that.
So, Mark, there were some reports and conversation based on an Athletic summary of where the White Sox are looking in spring training and saying that they have had or they did have conversations with the Reds about Luis Robert Jr., which leads you to believe they're still shopping him. I think they might have more value waiting until the trade deadline and gambling that he would still get off to a good start and be more valuable. But what do you think their thought process is a couple of weeks before spring training as it pertains to Luis Robert Jr.?
Yeah, I think it could be similar to what they did with Dylan Cease last year, right? Because that was the same. Granted, a different situation, you know, pitcher versus position player. But Dylan was, you know, had a great spring. Started off tremendously. There were some rumors about where he was going before. There were rumors about him going back to the winter meetings, actually. And I think they came to a point in spring training where they decided this is the time we have to move him. You know, we can't take a risk. Whatever he brings more, if he pitches 2 months well for us, we can't take a risk of, you know, something happening or him struggling and then the value going down. So they, you know, kind of, I don't know if rounded up is the best word, but put out that they needed the best offers. They got him and they made the trade. I would not be stunned if they did that with Luis Robert at some point during spring training. Luis Robert is a dynamic player. He's a five-tool talent. He had, as complete a season as I've seen with the White Sox in 2023, but he has been injured quite a bit by his own admission. I mean, he doesn't need to admit it. We've seen it, right? We've seen him absent from the injuries and had a rough year last year. Now, I think that's more the anomaly than what Luis Robert is about talent-wise. But if you keep him April, May, you know, looking at the trade deadline and he gets hurt, even for 2 or 3 weeks, that may lessen the value. So I would not be surprised the way Chris is running this if they kind of get into spring training, see how he looks, and then maybe, you know, do the same kind of path that they did with Dylan Cease.
You know, we know that the future looks pretty good for the White Sox. They had the lefty pitchers out, you know, George Wilklaw. You were you know all about who was president Sox Fest, and it seems like the past was well represented. I don't know what to make of the present, you know, after the 41-121 season. We were talking about, you know, we had a chance to talk to Will Venable, and a really bright guy, and you look at some of the changes they've made. If they get 20 games better, they're still going to lose 100. It's crazy to look at how far it fell last year, Mark. What is the best case scenario? Is this team in the midst of losing 100 games? In other words, not just this year, but moving forward to next year? When does the losing period of the program end and the winning begin?
You know, I think if you talk to the Sox, they'd like the losing to end now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, last year was rough. There's no question about it. In the context of a rebuild or not, 121 losses is not what you ever planned for. You know, I mean, you may go into the season saying, okay, you know, like last year, this is going to be a learning year. This is going to be a developing year. We're going to do what we can. But then again, you know, they, not to make excuses, but they had really no room for error, and then had nothing but error at the start, right? Robert got hurt. Jimenez got hurt. Moncada got hurt. Vaughn and Benintendi both struggled to begin the first half. So, you know, there's the problem right there, at the beginning at least. So I don't know. I mean, I would think more, you know, towards 26, 27. Looks like, you know, if you go by the natural path of the rebuild, more is kind of the building towards that sort of successful year. But, you know, I don't want to put a number on it now because you just don't know what happened.
Right.
You know, I remember talking to Edgar Caro earlier in the offseason about, you know, one of their young catchers, that he thought they were going to be better this year just because there's going to be a lot of young guys who are going to be really hungry and really competitive and really want to show something when they get there. Now, that's true. But also, you have a lot of young guys who are learning, right? Which is the whole point of playing them this year. The whole point of getting them out there and letting them take their lumps and then moving forward and seeing what they learn and seeing what we need to fill in. So I think both can be true. So, like you said, if they finish 61-101, that's a 20-game jump, right? So, you know, the bar is not extremely high, but I think they'd like to win as soon as possible. But I think it's still, you know, this year is more about giving these prospects who are ready a chance, seeing what you have, seeing what they need, and then seeing what you need as a team beyond that.
So they're not likely to add anybody before spring training or opening day. In your mind, you think that their payroll is going to stay where it is, and they're not likely to add any veterans, whether it's in the bullpen and the position. They have openings available, plenty in that lineup.
I think everything is fluid. You know, I think it depends on, you know, moves they make. You know, and I also think Chris told us, Chris and Will Venable met with us last Thursday at the ballpark, a week ago Thursday, and he said that the heavy lifting had been done, but he said, you know, there's still a lot of guys out there, right? There's still quite a few guys out there, and I just saw someone tweet, not a lot of open 40-man spots out there. So there may be guys that you thought they wouldn't add that they still could as spring training moves on. I mean, nothing says they can't add someone March 1st either, right, if they need someone, if someone's still available. So I think you'd never say it's done. But according to Chris, when we talked to him, kind of the heavy lifting is behind them going into 25.
Great stuff, Scott. Appreciate your time, buddy. Good catching up.
Thanks, Merck.
Always good talking to you guys. Take care.
That is the handsome and intelligent Merkin brother.
So that's unrelated to the Sox, but it's in baseball, and it's just curious if it's – I don't think they could have pulled this off, but Sox or the Cubs, frankly. Max Scherzer signs – 1-year deal, $15.5 million with the Blue Jays. That surprise you?
No. I thought
he's honestly, looking for a contender. He's looking for
a team that has ambition. That's a team that has money to spend. They didn't get the guys that they were hoping for. They tried to get involved in bigger sweepstakes. Does not shock me that they settled on a veteran pitcher who is very highly competitive and can hold his own.
Might have looked pretty decent in a Cub uniform, possibly. I look, you're kicking the tires on another starting pitcher, a lot of different starting pitching possibilities. You're shopping. You're perusing. You're evaluating. And I don't know that if you were in the Dylan Cease sweepstakes, or if you're talking about Michael King, did you at least consider Max Scherzer?
Probably not.
But is that compatible with what you're trying to do there?
I think a guy like that has a place in the league, obviously.
I know. Of course he does.
Yeah. I mean, he's great, great talent. But
just $15.5 million. Hey, I'm looking to reallocate those resources. That's
you,
all.
You didn't you pick up $15.5 million when you got rid of
thank you.
Yeah. Bellinger?
Yes.
So, I mean, that'd be a nice one to.
Dustin doesn't look like. I don't know what.
No,
they got the closer. They needed a closer. They got it. I mean, Max Scherzer's getting paid by like four Major League Baseball teams. The Blue Jays were desperate. Nobody, for some reason, wanted to take the Canadian team baseball's money. Now, Max Scherzer, no. Dylan Cease, that gets me going. Max Scherzer doesn't do a whole lot for me.
Dylan Cease,
a 1 year.
That's fine. 1 year.
1 year deal, but right. You have to give up something, and you can't have any certainty
Casey.
That they're going to trade. They're going to make that trade. Max Scherzer, it's only money, and you don't have to give up anything but that. So it's more certain that you would get somebody if you're looking to supplement your rotation. And I applaud them for wanting to do that, because I don't think that there are. I think some people are making assumptions about the rotation that I'm not necessarily comfortable in making about the entire depth of it. So one more quality arm would definitely make you feel a little bit better.
The White Sox got destroyed in that Dylan Cease trade. Not that I'm caught up on it, but, I mean, you look
not
at
yet.
It, pretty close to.
Not yet.
Drew Thorpe, he had surgery. They had to shave down a bone spur in his elbow or something, right, or his arm.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's suffered from inflammation. And he's not ready to go. Zavala is a young guy, but he hasn't made much of a move. And Jairo Iriarte could be in the back of the rotation.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you got for Dylan Cease.
Well,
I know they had Steven Wilson, but there's nothing there.
It's not trending well, but it's too early to form a conclusion on that. I
can do it.
I think you just did. I think that's fine. You're entitled to do that.
It's not trending well.
It's not trending well.
Okay.
I'm not ready to say Drew Thorpe is not going to be able to be a major league starter because he's having his
first
surgery.
Have you heard anything about Jacob Gonzalez? Remember him, the guy they drafted? I
didn't come up at Sox Fest.
No.
I
think he's kind of disappeared.
Remember.
I don't think he's as good in the minor leagues as he was in college, which is not good.
I don't remember him in college.
Yeah. Okay.
Brad Montgomery, pretty good in college.
It's a guy they traded for.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think that counts as their.
Now, Bob Nightingale tweets out, while it seems inevitable that Pete Alonso returns to the Mets, the Tigers and Red Sox loom as co-favorites for Alex Bregman. With no movement in Astros talks, where are the Cubs in that tweet?
They're in the Cease trade. They've shifted from watching what was going on with Bregman to watching what's going on with Cease.
I'll stick to hockey.
All right. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes. You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. This week, it's all about buy five and get five free when you buy 10 mix and match participating items. Here are just a few. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Pepsi, or Smartwater beverages of various sizes. 16-count fresh baked cookies and pint-sized Ben & Jerry's ice cream, as well as 6 mega or 12 double rolls of Signature Select soft and strong bath tissue and 6 rolls of Brightly paper towels selected varieties. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, it's Mark Schlereth of the Sink of Truth podcast. The NFL playoffs are here, and I'll be breaking down every matchup as we get toward the big game. Join my co-host Mike Evans and I on the Sink of Truth podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, really, throughout the week, streamlining the teaching progression for the players, making sure that everything is built around them. You know, myself, Ben, and the rest of the staff, we're not going to take a snap this year. We have to make sure that our players understand their toolbox so that they can go out and play fast and play at a high level.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Yeah, that kind of that is a nice thing to hear from a Declan Doyle. That sort of is the message in a lot of ways that that you heard from the head coach Ben Johnson to the staff when he first was introduced to the staff. That, you know, it's all about the players, and that is reinforced there from Declan Doyle.
Yeah, he'll face a challenge in getting in front of those players, and I'm sure they'll be sizing him up, and some of them wondering how somebody their age or contemporary of theirs is in a position to coach them, teach them, or show them anything that they don't know already. That's always going to be the challenge when you have a younger coach, and the Bears have the youngest offensive coordinator in the NFL, so that's going to be something to keep an eye on. Here we are, Friday of the first full week of the Ben Johnson era, him in charge at Howell's Hall, and he's putting the final touches on his coaching staff. Bill Johnson was added on Thursday night as a defensive assistant, according to
Biggs
today. They're interviewing Roshar.
They talked the report that we had earlier, it was that Bill Johnson was the defensive line coach. That was reported, and Biggsy clarified he's a defensive assistant, not the line coach necessarily.
Yeah, that he's added to the staff.
Yes,
as you said. And then he'll today interview Roshar as the offensive line coach. They've already talked to the Ohio State offensive line coach, and maybe a decision is imminent there. Seems like it's Roshar's job to lose. But they have a collection of talent that is some very experienced football lifers and some guys at the beginning of their careers or maybe coming from the college sport. So that's going to be good good way to put it all together. It does seem young. It seems like a young staff full of, I think the ex-player factor is a very good idea.
Yep.
It worked in Detroit, works on many staffs, and certainly the Bears hope it will work here in Chicago.
It seems young on offense because, of course, the head coach is young, and he's got guys like that he worked with in Detroit, like JT Barrett, who is young, like Antoine Randall-El, who is local guy, made good, still young. I kind of like the idea of like the young offensive guys matching what the young head coach likes.
Well, that's where you need to see the biggest difference and change, and that's why Ben Johnson is here in the first place. This was an offense that was broken all season long. Certainly didn't get off to good starts. They never scored in the first quarter. They never had leads to protect. And the Bears will look most different in 2025 on offense.
Yep.
Defensively, you need some things you need to clean up. You need some points of emphasis in terms of stopping the run and getting to the quarterback and all that. But defensively, it's going to look very familiar in theory. Dennis Allen is not going to be that much dramatically different than what Matt Eberflus was as a defensive play caller, a little more aggressive. But the main characters at every level are going to be the same guys. With the Bears, the offensive line is going to be somewhat revamped in theory. And you're going to add a running back to the mix. You may add a wide receiver to the mix, and you're going to have a quarterback that hopefully takes that next step. And the plays, ideally, will look very different than they did before.
No doubt about that. I mean, you know, this guy is an established and a very well thought of offensive mind, talking about Ben Johnson as the head coach, and he's the play caller. So he's got to get people in that he's either worked with and know how he operates, or guys capable of picking up any of the slack and spending their time up late. I think that the Declan Doyle job description that he gave about having to make sure that the information he gives the coach can trust, and it can help him in his decision-making, that guy is going to be working really hard way late into the late hours of the evening. That is what that job
all
is.
Coaches do, though, don't they?
All coaches do, but all coaches offensive do. Coaches do. But
yeah, I think
for a young coordinator,
it's a tough gig.
You're going to be working twice as hard as anyone.
Yeah, I think he'll have a lot of company in the office. I think his responsibilities will be much different than, say, your quarterback's coach or your position coaches, because he's got to kind of be the bridge between the head coach and those groups. But he came here because he's got a lot of energy. He's somebody who's not afraid of a challenge, and he's worked his way up. He had $7,000. He was making $7,000, and he drove down to New Orleans, and Sean Payton let him, basically be heard, and he gave him a chance, and then he followed him to Denver, and now he's in Chicago. So that's going to be fun to see. Is he an easy guy to root for? I think he came across as intelligent, intense, and maybe a tad bit inexperienced. And those are things you expect from a 28-year-old doing this for the first time.
Hey, we want to remind everybody, the Slam Dunk in Vegas is a national contest that's easy to enter. You just download the Odyssey app and you log in, listen to the score each day for a minimum of 1 hour. You do that anyway. And then you get your daily entry, a chance to win an unforgettable trip for four during the first weekend of the tournament in March. That is one of the great weekends in Vegas. You'll stay at Circa Resort and Casino, where you can visit the biggest March hoops party at Stadium Swim. The airfare is included. Plus, you'll get $20,000 to fund the ultimate viewing experience in Vegas. So everybody in your crew, you'll have your boys, $20,000, and a free stay at Circa. I mean, what do you want out of life?
It's a great offer. It's a great opportunity, and to be a great weekend.
Yeah.
A lot of possibilities there. Speaking of possibilities, never too early for free agent speculation.
Please.
And Bigsy had a good item on his 10 thoughts, the Senior Bowl edition. That is now on ChicagoTribune.com. The prevailing thought during the season was there was no way Chiefs right guard Trey Smith would make it to free agency, but he's hearing a little bit different now. There's a possibility, and maybe even a likelihood, that Trey Smith will hit the open market. And the Chiefs have a lot of other guys they need to retain and address. I don't know if it's any bigger than your offensive line and a guy that valuable to that offensive line. But they may let him hit the market, or they may look at him as a franchise tag guy in a tag and trade scenario, the way they have done in the past. But the bottom line is that the information or the rumor surrounding Trey Smith's availability as a free agent is something that Bears fans are paying close attention to.
Well, they should pay close attention to it, because Trey Smith is an excellent football player. He's a guy who came into the league. There was a medical concern. He fell later in the draft, and he has just developed into a stud of an offensive lineman. Now, a lot of people don't want to pay the kind of money it's going to cost at the guard position, but I think the Bears need a guard pretty desperately. And if you got a guy who's all-pro quality player, that would take that offense to – it would immediately help everybody on the line. It would help the players around him. Obviously – I feel like they need at least three starters out of this offseason. You get one in free agency, that's great. If you can get another, find a center somehow, that's awesome. Then you got to spend a couple picks as well to get guys that you're going to help develop and turn into good players.
Quentin Nelson makes $20 million a year for the Colts.
Yes.
And this would be the Bears' version of Quentin Nelson.
Yeah.
and you would be paying him in that range, if not higher. You'd be setting the market for offensive guards. And I do think it's almost a dated way of looking at it if you say, well, you don't pay guards. There are eight guards in the NFL, I believe, right now that make at least $17 million a year or more. Mm. And so you're paying guards the way that you used to think about paying tackles. And the bottom line is if you find somebody that you consider a foundational piece of an offensive line, it's worth the investment, especially for a team that has not had much of an offensive line in recent years.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you're immediately, you know, you're getting like a huge upgrade from what you've been playing, okay? This guy is an established NFL star, for God's sake. And normally guys like that aren't allowed out of teams, but they've got a lot of contractual issues. Now, listen, a thousand things can happen. You got to keep your eye on, you know, is Kelce getting ready to retire? Is this his last Super Bowl, or is he just getting going? I mean, you know, does he have another year after this, I suppose?
I would think that would be likely.
Yeah, but I mean, who knows?
Who knows
what his, you know, future holds?
But Trey Smith is somebody that is entering.
And they got other guys like that.
It's his prime. He's somebody that you feel like he's now, he would be hitting the open market with a winning championship pedigree, and he's somebody that would be easy to justify overpaying. You're going to overpay whoever you sign in free agency.
Yeah. Listen, but free this agency that's Michigan Avenue shopping, right?
Yeah.
Like you're not, there aren't bargains available, and you know, when you have a lot of money and you go onto the free agent market, you're expected to spend accordingly. So that those are the teams you're really in battle against.
It will come up. I don't know how important it is, as it's shown not to be very, but Ryan Poles was in the Chiefs front office when they drafted Trey Smith. So there's a familiarity, or at least an appreciation for him. They know, he probably knows some of his background from that process, but I don't know that we can count on that meaning as much as you might want it to mean. But he does have at least a working knowledge of the person that is behind the player.
This guy's entering his prime as well. And normally, when you're talking about offensive linemen, teams don't let guys like that out of the building, guys that can block. They just don't let them out of the building. So if he does reach the free agent market, the Bears better be first in line. They better be able to take a big swing and get a guy this good, because they've failed to do so up to this point.
Yep, no doubt about it. So this weekend, no football. That's going to be weird. The Senior Bowl, but I don't know if that counts. So there's no football on Sunday. No NFL game for the first time in a very long time.
Yeah.
No NFL game for the first time since the Bears played in Canton.
Wow.
Isn't that the first weekend without NFL football?
Didn't we go there?
We did go there. Is that last year or this year?
Yeah, that's. I think it was a year ago.
Seems like a year ago.
We went there several years ago. What? No, I mean, you're right. It's just wacky. Holy cow. What will we do?
Well, the biggest the sporting event, you got the Bulls tonight against the Raptors.
Okay.
The Hawks are on the road tomorrow at noon against the Panthers.
Okay.
And Cooper Flagg makes his first appearance in the Duke-North Carolina rivalry, I believe. Is that at Cameron Indoor, perhaps? I'm not sure where that game is being played, but I know Cooper Flagg has his first appearance.
At Duke, 5:30 tomorrow night.
Oh, that's
a big one. It's on my radar.
He's springing into that
one. What else you got? Are you watching the fights? Are you going for the...
So here's what I got. I mean, because of the talk of earlier in the segment about the offensive linemen, and obviously we watched the game. We all watched it. I want to rewatch the game, and I want to watch every offensive snap the Chiefs had, and I want to stare at the right guard. And then I'm going to DVR the Senior Bowl. I'm not going to sit and watch the whole thing. I'm going to DVR the Senior Bowl, and then I'm going to watch this guy that everybody's in love with from North Dakota State, and I want to watch every snap in the game that he takes. And then I'm going to watch Duke and North Carolina. And then if I want to take a nap, I'm going to watch the golf.
How big is the kid from?
Yeah, thank you. Gray Zabel?
Yeah.
Gray Zabel from North Dakota State.
I got to tell you.
His name came up twice this week.
Yes. But
Clay Harbor and Brad Biggs.
I was looking him up yesterday, and I saw I saw him listed as 6'4". Weren't we told he was 5'10"?
No, that's the center.
That's the center. You're thinking of the center that Clay described.
Who is that?
I'm not sure about the 5'10" center.
So Zabel is a different
Greg
guy.
Zabel's a tackle that can play guard.
Yes, and he's and a center. Big man, right?
He can play everywhere.
Yeah.
He played left tackle for the Bison.
Right.
In North Dakota
but
State.
But he projects to more of a
he's
guard.
He's projecting as a guard, but he's fluid enough to play center. So I think when you're Gray Zabel, you pretty much are looking at wherever they need you to play. You're going from North Dakota State to the NFL. That's a name to keep an eye on. And by the draft,
big man,
he will be a legend in somebody's mind if he's not already. I mean, this kid's climbing fast.
You know, I'll tell you what, like, believe it or not, that happens. There are guys that you haven't really heard about or talked about that suddenly are going to be in the top of the first round or maybe the bottom of the first, but they'll be in the first round. Players
these guys,
go on the move during the scouting.
They do,
season.
And this is the time to do that for the rank and file of the NFL draft. And I don't know if you're going to draft a 5'10" center. But he is somebody that a guy like Marshall edge rusher Mike Green, you'll find out more about him between now and then. And this is the launching point for his kind of prospect rise.
And this guy played some center too in the Senior Bowl practice. No. Is that right?
Oh, no.
Who else?
No,
I'm talking about Zabel.
No, Zabel played a little. Yeah, Zabel played a little.
They moved him everywhere. He literally played
versatile.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. He played it in high school, apparently.
Like Dustin?
No, for like 2 years, and he's moved to guard and then tackle because he's a big, strong man.
Sounds like Cody Whitehair.
Willie Lampkin, by the way. Willie Lampkin is the 5'10", 270-pound center from North Carolina. Right. Willie Lampkin.
North Carolina. Tar Heel bias from the former North Carolina walk-on quarterback, maybe.
Walk-on center. What?
See?
I think he might get drafted. All right. We'll figure all that out. We've got Dan and Marshall, and we'll talk to them next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.